Welcome to this next lecture on virtual machines. I hope my voice will survive today. So last time, I guess you learned a lot about how to deal with variables in local variables and global variables in functional programs, and also about how to deal with let expressions. So let expressions introduce local definitions which are maintained on the stack. And so the relative addresses for these local variables are the relative addresses of these local variables are counted relative to a particular point inside the stack frame. And then additionally, one maintains for every broken point the stack distance so that you can use the stack pointer to address the local variables. So that was kind of the new thing which you learned about how to access variables in functional languages. And I don't know whether Stefan has told you, but in principle you could do the same thing also for C. Instead of using the frame pointer, you could also use the stack pointer to access the local variables. And there's only one point where this goes wrong, and that is when you allocate some arrays or some block of data of statically unknown size on the stack. Only then it is that you lose the information how to recover the locals from the stack pointer. But we use this more conventional way of introducing a frame pointer nonetheless, because that makes it simple, because the distance of the locals to the frame pointer does never change. So therefore this is kind of an invariant, and so it is kind of easy to understand. Here, in this case, the same variable is accessed with different instructions, if you like, because the stack pointer might have changed in between. So this makes the code difficult to read, perhaps still easy to generate, but difficult to read and understand, because, once again, different instructions may be required to access the same variable on the same location in the stack. So now let's proceed to function definitions. So, once again, this is something which is... So this now is a little bit specific to functional programming, since functions, please recall that functions are first-class citizens. So that is, functions are data, if you like. So these are put it in different words, these are values. So that is, you can store them away, or you can assign them to variables, you can pass them as parameters, you can return them as values. You can do everything with them, what you also can do with other values. But that means at some point this function might be called. And then the functional value, if you like, must have all the information required to perform the function call at that other place. So it is, when you want to implement a function, we cannot only do it by a function pointer, which is the start address of the code, but we must perhaps provide a wrap into the functional value all things which are required to evaluate the function whenever it is called. Now, and we have already agreed upon what kind of information might be required for a function when it is called. The first thing is, the function may contain global variables. So, and the idea is that we kind of maintain the global variables of an expression in a vector. This is the global vector. That is, when we create a functional value, we kind of have to collect all the globals possibly mentioned in the function and collect them into a vector. This is the global vector. Then, additionally, a function may be partially applied. So, a function with 20 arguments may be applied to 16, and that means that it is that the result is still a function which now expects 4 more arguments in order to fire. Only when all 20 arguments are available, the function can be evaluated. The function call can be evaluated. So therefore, a functional object in general will not only have this function pointer and the global vector, but also some of the arguments for the function. Now when we see a functional value for the first time, when we create a functional value for the first time, then then typically this function has no arguments. So therefore, we have to create an empty argument vector and then wrap them together with a reference to the code into the functional object, which then is represented in the heap. Yeah. So this is in some sense also one might call it closure. But it is a functional value. And in this sense, it is the generalization of the C pointer, which does not require this global vector and this argument vector, and therefore it suffices to maintain the code pointer alone. So, speaking aside, if you want to implement, for example, functional values in Java, then you will also have global variables there and other such things, and therefore we also will have to create a more complicated thing, which in some sense resembles such a functional value. Okay. So now that is kind of the thing which you have to collect when you create the functional value. But in order to do so, you also have to provide the code for the body itself. That is where the code pointer points to. So you need code, otherwise you cannot point to it. Yeah? So therefore, at the point when you have the definition of a function, you therefore create two kinds of code. One thing is the code, this green thing, which is executed when the function is effectively called, and then another piece of code, which is kind of executed in order to create the functional value. These are two separate issues. Is this clear? That these are two separate issues? Okay. So now, here is kind of the code for a functional, the definition of a function. And you see the function has k arguments and a body, which is E. And then this is, for the moment, we always consider code V. That is, this is the code to create a functional value. Yeah. So when executed, we generate code. When we execute this code, the result should be a reference to a data section in the heap where there are code pointer, argument pointer, and global pointer. Okay? And so now this code consists of what? So let me see. It consists of, so let us do it in red. So it consists of this portion. So this portion is you retrieve the values of the variables set 0 to set g minus 1, which are the free variables, the global variables in the function. So these are maintained in your address environment. Depending whether they are global or local, you have you choose another instruction, this getVar instruction, to retrieve the value and push the corresponding value or the reference, the corresponding reference on top of the stack. Now you have all these values stacked on top of each other. Then comes this make vector thing, which takes these references and collects them into a vector. Yeah. So after that, you have a reference to a vector on top of the stack, and the vector contains all references to the globals. Okay? Then you have to in order to create then the functional value, you need to know where does the code for the function start. And say, let us assume that it starts at this address A. Yeah? At this address A, so this address together with the global vector, and as we have said, this constant argument vector, this empty argument vector, then should be wrapped into the functional value. So far we have no instruction to do that, so therefore we take the liberty to invent such a function, which is this one. So we make this functional value, and we again note that this instruction has kind of two extra arguments. One argument is the global vector. This is on top of the stack. And the other one is this start code of the function. And that is this A, which is statically known and therefore provided within the instruction itself. Okay? So, I guess we have not yet seen this make vector instruction and this make funval instruction, and that we will see in a minute. Okay, and then having done that, how does the code proceed? Well, then additionally, as I said, we need code for evaluating the, which is executed when the function effectively is called, and this code is here, starting at address A. I will immediately explain this yellow code, but let me continue with this red section, which is which should create the functional value. Okay, this has been achieved after this make funval instruction, and then the only thing is we now have to continue with the code. We do not have to execute the code of the body right away. Therefore, we jump across the yellow code section and continue with B. Okay? So that is at address B. When we arrive at the code address B, on top of the stack, we have a reference to a functional value. And that should be provided. That is kind of, as I have said in the beginning, this is what we expect from this code V for the functional for the function definition. Okay? Is there a question for that? Then let us have another look at this yellow section. Let me kind of perhaps remove all the other colorful things, and let us now take a careful look at this yellow section. So this is the code which is executed when this function here is called. So now what does it consist of? It consists essentially of the code V for the body. Yeah, when the function is called, we want the body of the function to be evaluated, and as when the function is called, then we want to have the value of the function, otherwise we would not have called it. Therefore, it is code V for the body of the function. So now we have to four more things to explain. So the first thing is, it is not the code V for the body of the function alone. There are two more things. There is test arc, this test arc instruction before, and this return K instruction afterwards. This decoration we will explain later. This is required in order to cope for the situation, to deal with the situation when the function is called with too few or too many arguments. Yeah? So, but for the moment, let us forget this decoration and let us look and let us just keep in mind that essentially the code for the function is the V code for the body of the function. There are two more things, which is the address environment in which this E is evaluated. And you see here, this address environment is row prime. It is not the same address environment which we had when the function was defined. Why? What has changed? Now the question is, now what is this row prime? This row prime speaks about the variables which are visible within the function body. Within the function body, we have the parameters x0 to xk minus 1. When the function is evaluated, where are the variables x0 to xk minus 1? They are the parameters. They sit on the stack. We know how to access the parameters. We decided to give them relative addresses, so they are local, since they are on the stack, and they get negative relative addresses, where the relative address is minus the index. So x0 gets, therefore, relative address 0, while x1 gets minus 1, and so on. So this reminds us that the relative address is relative to the topmost address on top of the stack when the function is entered. And when the function is entered, the only things on the stack are the parameters. And we have kind of decided to put them onto the stack in a right-to-left fashion so that the xk minus 1 is downmost in the stack and the leftmost variable, the x0, is topmost on the stack. Therefore, relative to the top of the stack, x0 has relative address 0. Okay? So this accounts for the negative relative addresses of the parameters. What else kind of variables are available within the body of the of this function? These are those variables which are not among the x0 to xk minus 1, but occur in the E. These are global variables. Where are these global variables? Well, when we created the functional value, we collected all of them into this global vector. Therefore, if these variables are set 0 to zg minus 1, then they have relative addresses j. Yeah, because these are the globals which sit in the global vector, and they are addressed relative to the start, to the left relative inside this vector. Yeah, and it is an array, so it is the indices are 0, 1, 2, and so on. Yeah, so therefore these are marked as global and get relative address j if it is the jth variable. Okay, so this is the address environment within which we generate code for the body of the function. Okay, so does this make sense to you? Okay, so now then the final thing which we have to take care of is that when we generate code V for example, we need to know what is the stack distance before the code to be generated is executed. Well, and the stack distance before the body of the function is entered is when the parameters sit on the stack and the stack pointer puts is so nothing beyond the formals or the actual parameters has been pushed on top of the stack, and therefore stack distance at that point is zero. Okay? So this, now I hope I have explained virtually everything. This one I did not explain, but we come back to that. This one we also have not explained, but we come back to it. And now it only we have to take a look at these two instructions, and then we know everything about the function call. Okay? So here's this make vector thing. In some sense, we have a bunch of references on the stack, and we put these references into a vector. That's all. The only thing which we have to kind of keep in mind is in which order we have put the globals into the stack, so that we know which globals are sit in which position of the vector. So since we put sets, so here is the convention, it's just a convention, we could have chosen a different convention. Set 0 is bottommost in the stack, and this is leftmost in the vector. Yes? Because set 0 should receive relative address 0. So that means the bottommost reference must be put leftmost into the vector. It's just a convention. So just that we kind of have a one-to-one mapping between what we have on the stack and what we have in the vector. So there's no, beyond that, there's no miracle. We only have to recall that so that we can recover the variable appropriately. Okay? So this make vector is no miracle. The only thing is we know how many things we put into the vector, and we record inside the vector how many elements are there. So in this sense, everything here is, if you like, well typed. Now this make funval thing. This was the second instruction which I promised to you. So recall, on top of the stack, this instruction expects a pointer to a global vector. And this A should be a code address. And then we replace the reference to the vector with a reference to a functional value. So that is, we have to create a functional value. Inside this functional value, we have to store the code address A. We have to store an empty vector for the arguments, and we have to store a vector for the globals. And that's it. Okay? Now, so this was not too difficult, but we may immediately make a little experiment and try to implement this kind of function. Yeah? And see what the code is. So there is a global variable B, and global variable A inside the function, and we have to provide the relative address for that, and the information whether it is local or global. Only then we can generate code for it. So let us assume that the address environment assigns A to L, 1. So it's relative address 1 and is a local. And let us assume that the stack distance is also 1, just for a test and for an experiment, and then we can start to generate code. Yeah. So let's see what we have to do. The first thing is we have to create the global vector. A is a global variable. I said it is a global variable. Before that I said it is a local, but that was a mistake which I corrected. So now, the first thing is we have to create the global vector. So for that, we have to push a reference for A on top of the stack. So therefore we have to look what is A? What is A? And we know it is a local with relative address 1. So stack distance is also 1. So we have to do a push log. Stack distance minus relative address. And that is 1 minus 1 is 0. So therefore, we have to do a push log 0 to access the A. Having done that, the stack distance has increased by 1. So therefore, now we have stack distance 2. So let me please continue. You may ask later. So we have stack distance 2. So then we make the vector. The vector removes the reference on top of the stack and puts it into a vector. So that is this instruction, and that results, since one reference is replaced by another, the stack distance still has not increased, it is still 2. Now we make the functional value here. Again, a reference to the global is replaced by another reference, namely a reference to the functional value. Therefore, still the stack distance is 2, because we simply have one more reference on top of the stack. Yeah. So then, having done that, we jump behind the code which is wrapped inside, which starts at address A and which is meant to evaluate, to be called and evaluated, executed when the function is called. And so at least we, although we do not know what test arg 1 and return 1 means, we at least can generate these functions without problem. So here, therefore, the beginning of the code for the body starts with test arg 1 because the function has one argument, the B. And here comes the return 1 because one argument, the B. Okay? And in between, now comes the code V for the body. And the body is A plus B. So that is the code for evaluating A plus B. So the first thing which we have to do when we want to evaluate that is we have, and we need the V code of it. But this is an arithmetic expression. So for an arithmetic expression, the V code equals the B code, and then we make a basic object. So that is, we now do the B code for A plus B. So in order to do that, we first have to get hold of the A. Now A is a global variable and has been collected in the global vector. And since it's the only one, it has relative address 0. Therefore, we access it by a push glob 0. This gives us the reference to the A. When the whole programming language has a semantics which is called by need, like in Haskell, we cannot be sure that the reference really points to a value. It could also point to a closure. Therefore, we have to do this eval. We do not yet know what eval does. We will later explain it. When we are in a call by value in language like in OCaml, when we have a reference to a value, then we know the value is a value. So then we can avoid and eliminate this eval. Okay? So after the eval, we know we have a reference to a value on top of the stack. But we want to do arithmetic. So we need the value not in the heap, but we need the value on the stack. Therefore, we have to do this get basic. This is this one. So now we have the A, the value of A on top of the stack. Now we have to evaluate B, and it's again the code B, because it's an arithmetic operation which needs its argument as a on the stack. So we have to now to do code B for the variable B. Now B is a formal parameter and has relative address 0. Yeah, because it's the only parameter and the numbering of the parameter starts with 0. So it is the relative address is so and then one more thing which I should have explained. We are here in the body of the function, and there we start again by doing with stack distance 0. So therefore here is stack distance 0, and after the test arc is still stack distance 0. So also this push glob has increased the value because the reference has been pushed on top of the stack. The eval has not changed the stack distance, and the get basic also has not changed the stack distance. So therefore, we have still stack distance 1. And now we have to access the B. I said the relative address of B is 0, and it is a local variable. And since the stack distance is 1, 1 minus 0 is 1. So therefore, we have to do push log 1. This is this one. Now we have a reference to the B on top of the stack, and we have to play the same game. We don't know whether this reference points to a closure or to a value. So therefore, if we are in Haskell, we have to evaluate. If we are in OCaml, we have to do nothing. We know it's a value. Yeah? So, after the eval, we know now the reference is to something which we can use as a number, which is a number. And so then we can put it onto the stack because we want to add it. So therefore, we do this get basic thing. Now we have the value on the stack. Now we can add. But now we have the value of A plus B on top of the stack. But the whole thing we want to do code V for, not code B. So after, when we exit the function, we want to have the value in the heap again now. So therefore we put it into the heap and we make this basic value. Yeah? And then we do this magic return 1 and then we are done. And then we continue with B. We continue with B, which is the first instruction behind the code for this function definition. And please notice the stack distance here is the stack distance there. Yeah? It is the stack distance when after we have created the functional value. Because from there we jump to B, and in between these two position points in the code, the stack distance has not changed. So therefore it's 2 in both places. Okay? Now your question.
Yes, this address environment row in there, it says A is a local variable, this address 1, but you said A is a global variable. So
it is a local variable outside the function f, and it is a global variable inside the function of f. So the role of A changes at the place where I am. And when I kind of access the A before I enter f, I access it as a local, and then I wrap it into the global vector, and from that on, I may retrieve it again from the global vector, and then it is a global. This makes the difference, because there's a row, and there's a row prime. That is kind of a point which you have to be aware of here, that the address environment changes from one program point to the other. And whether a function, whether A is a local or global, depends on which expression you look at. And outside the function f, it may be local, and inside the function of f, from the inside out, it is global. Yeah? So that makes the life a little bit more complicated here. In fact, it was equally complicated for C. At least by example, I showed to you that also at different points in the program, the address environment changes. Because at some points, a variable is global, X is a global variable, and at some other point, there is a local with the same name, and so the global is hidden by the local definition. So there you also have to kind of keep track where in the code you are and what variables you see and whether they are local or global. But here it is more, in functional programs, it's more kind of visible. But also in this is a problem, not a problem, but a feature of any modern programming language, the management of the visibility and of the variables, so that you can reuse the same name again and again, and in different contexts it means a different thing. So also in Java you have a multitude of visibility scopes of variables. You can have package scope, you can have class scope, you can have method scope, object scope, or if you can have inner classes, and so on and so on. And so things relative to the point in the code where you are, the same variable could be defined at different levels. Yes, please. I gave you the calculation. Stack distance minus relative address. And the relative address is 0.
Yeah,
and therefore 1 minus 0 is 1. And you simply have to apply the formula. And the formula has been explained to you by Stefan. There was a long argument about it, why to do this in this formula or not. And it... In some sense, the instructions are defined so that this formula simply is the right one. You could have, if you had different semantics for the instructions, the formulas would be different.
Okay, but, I mean, we have the value of B on the stack, or at least the...
What do you have on the stack?
On the stack we should have code B of B, right? Before the execution of the make func value.
Where? Here.
Yeah, no, but actually before that, we should have...
Here?
Yeah. No, I mean at the top. Sorry.
Here.
Here we should have, at this point, the stack should be somehow like a pointer to the heap where the value of B is, right?
No. No. At that point, there is no B. At that point, there's only an A. And A is a local. And so I wrap it into a global vector, because A is global. It's there is no B. There is no B. B is a parameter of the function. B will be provided when function is called, but here is the code for the definition of the function. And so therefore. This is the code. So let me kind of remove everything. So this is the code which is executed when the functional value is created. There's no B. Now then there's another portion of the code, which is this one. This is the code which is executed when the function is called. When the function is called, B sits on the stack.
Yeah.
And it has relative address 0. So therefore, when I'm at that point here, the stack distance is 1. So we access it as access B as a local variable, relative address 0, with stack distance 1. This gives us a push log 1 minus 0 equals, so a push log 1. Okay.
Okay, but I thought make fun wall, that increases the stack
distance. Make fun wall, there is no make fun wall in the red section. The make fun wall value, the fun value is created in the yellow section. And in the yellow section there is no B. Because this is a parameter. This is the actual parameter which is later provided when the function is called. But in the yellow section, only the functional value is created. Okay? So this makes it a little bit, so you have, there are different times for something. At one time, a function is created, and then another time, a function is called. This is like in, in an object-oriented language, at one time, an object is created, and later the object is manipulated by a method call or something. Okay? So in this sense, now let us see what happens at a function application. So that is kind of now the interesting point, because that is the place where a function possibly might be called. Yeah? So therefore now, without function application, creation of functional objects would be meaningless. Okay, so therefore now we have to deal with it, and we have to deal with it in two. Again, so we have to, the goal is to generate code for such a functional application which returns a value. Yeah, so we want to create V code. But still, there's a big difference what kind of parameter passing scheme we follow. If it is a call by need, a parameter passing scheme, this means that these parameters have to be provided not as values, but as closures. We have no idea so far what to do with closures. We only have this kind of placeholder, this code C scheme, which is able, or which we later will kind of define, and which is kind of, which will allow us to generate closures for expressions. But that is what we would have to do when we are in a Haskell world. When we are in a OCaml world, it's much easier. We have to evaluate E0 to EM minus 1. We have to evaluate them to values. So it's the usual thing. Now, so having said that, now let us kind of collect what we expect, what kind of tasks we have when we want to evaluate this function call. So clearly, the function is called. So we, for a function call, what did we do in C? We provided a separate stack frame, because there is kind of an intermediate calculation which is done, and this intermediate calculation is done within a stack frame. So that is the first thing which we provide is a stack frame. And then, we have to implement the parameter passing. And there, in case of call by value, we would have to evaluate in the actual parameters, and recall the strategy was to evaluate them from right to left. And we would do call by value for them when we are in OCaml, and we would provide closures for EM minus 1 to E0 if we are in Haskell, in the Haskell world. But in both cases, we proceed from right to left. Okay? What did we do after the parameter passing in C? The final step was to evaluate the function. We have to know what is the function. And then the question is, and this is no difference here. This E prime could be an arbitrary complex expression. So it need not be just the name of a function like an f or what. It could be arbitrarily complicated. So we have to evaluate it. We have now to work on this E prime until we arrive at a value, and hopefully, if the functional program is well typed, then hopefully we will arrive at a value which is a functional value that is an F object. And now we have this, after, on top of the references to the actual parameters, these are the E0s to EM minus 1s, we then have a reference to an F object. Like in C, there we had the code pointer, the address on top of the stack, and then we did the call. And here is in some sense the same. So we have now the reference, but not just the code pointer, the address itself, but a reference to an F object, and then we apply the function. We don't know how, but we will provide an instruction which does it for us. Okay? So this, now having said that, we kind of generate code. So we are kind of now very, how would you say, we just try. Yeah. So we feel strong and we do it. And for tasks which we have identified but not yet implemented, we generate a new instruction. So for allocating the stack frame, we do this marking. And because mark was also the instruction for the C machine to allocate the stack frame, and allocation of the stack frame also meant that we kind of saved some organizational registers. And here we are a little bit more liberal, more specific, if you like, in that this mark instruction receives the return address. This is the address where to continue when the function call has terminated. This is the first address behind the code for the function application. Yeah, this must be stored somewhere in the stack frame, and we pass it to the instruction mark here directly in the instruction. Just as a recall or a recap, how was that handled? The storing of the return address in the stack frame. How did we do that in the C machine? The call instruction did it. How did the call instruction do it? It kind of exchanged the start address of the code on top of the stack with the return address. And it could retrieve the return address because it was the next instruction after the call. So, and therefore the call instruction was able to save the return address. And here, this apply instruction, which we have in place of the call, is a little bit more complicated and therefore will not be able to do the saving in the proper way. Therefore, we kind of delegate the saving of the return address to the mark instruction. This is a design choice. We could have done it differently, but it is for simplicity that we do it in this way. Okay? And in between now, after having marked off the stack frame, we said we want to pass the parameters, and that is here. And you see all these everywhere we have the C code, although we do not yet know how C code works, but we would at least create closures for all the parameters. And please note, for OCaml, we would have always a V here. Now, so, and now, having seen that there is the parameters to be evaluated, we have to kind of check what is the address environment and what is the stack distance. So here, in all of them, the address environment is the same, and it is the same as for the whole expression. And this is clear, because these are evaluated in the same context. No locals additionally on the stack, no globals, no different globals. It is all the same address environment for all the expressions. So that is the first message. The second message is here, the stack distance has increased by 3 when we arrive at the rightmost argument. Why? Because the mark instruction has saved 3 registers on top of the stack. So therefore, the stack pointer, the stack distance has increased by 3. Okay? And now for the next one, we see, oh, it's no longer 3, it's 4. Why?
Because
Yes, because we have a reference for one closure sitting on the stack already. And so now comes the next one. So another closure is sitting on the stack, and so on and so forth. And therefore, the stack distance increases whenever we proceed from one argument to the next, until we arrive at the last one, and then the stack distance is, so to speak, maximal. And then the next thing is that we have to now I remove all the colorful things. So we have done the parameter passing. Now comes the evaluation of the expression E prime itself. And for that, under all circumstances, we have to evaluate E prime to a value, because it's the function. We need to know the function. If we don't know the function, we cannot call it. So therefore, we have to evaluate E prime to a value. Okay? And then come, finally, following the mark at the beginning, this apply instruction, which does applies the function to the arguments. We have no idea how this works, but we generate we have to do it, that we know, and so we generate an instruction to do it for us. And so this means we can already generate code with these placeholders, mark A and apply. Okay? And this means, for example, if we have to do this function application, very simple, F is a local and has relative address 2, stack distance is 2. Now we generate, how do we do? And for simplicity, I assume that we now have an OCaml and not a Haskell world. So that is, I'm a bit bored by this writing eval all the time. So therefore no eval. So what would we do for this function application? So generating code means, so let me kind of remove all these colors and start again. So we first have to mark, and in the end we have to apply, and in between we have to evaluate. There's only one argument. We have to evaluate it to a value in the heap. So that is, so it's a basic value, 42, so we load the constant 42 and we make a basic thing out of it. And you see, before the marking, we had stack distance 2. Marking increases by 3, so therefore we have 5 here. Then loading the constant increases to 6. Making basic doesn't change, so it's always 6. And now we have to evaluate the expression f to a functional value. Now f is a variable. How do we evaluate it? Well, we look it up in our address environment, which tells us f has a relative address 2. And 6 minus 2 is 4. So therefore we have to do a push log 4 to push the value for f on top of the stack. And now we can do the apply. Okay? That's it. So you see, we just apply what we have learned, and then we can do it. And without that, I guess we would be a little bit doomed. Okay? And now, now we are so, we are proud with all, we can now really generate code for non-trivial examples, like for this one. So if it's a call by value thing, and the stack distance is 0, because this is our main program, for example, then we first apply the rules for the let. This means we evaluate the right-hand side for the A, make a basic value out of it, and now we have for the let A equals 17. And please note that after that point, we have in our address environment A as a local with a relative address 1. Yeah. So row now maps A to L with relative address 1. And now we have to do this F equals fun B A plus B. So now the stack distance is 1, and we have to do that. The code we have seen, so I will not kind of explain this code again to you, but just say that let us make it perhaps in red. Perhaps in red. This piece of code we have already seen. This is the code for the right-hand side of F. And after that red code, we continue. And now our address environment has changed, because now we have not only A to be a local, but also F, and this is another local with relative address 2. Okay? And with this information, we then arrive at that program point. Now we have to do the main body of the let, which is this F applied to 42. So we mark away a stack frame, as we did on the last slide. And then we generate the actual parameter for F. We generate the... I made a mistake. Sorry. I should have... The 5, 6, and 7, this is applies to the right column and not to the left column. These are the stack distance for the right column. And then at that point here, when we apply F to 42, which is ultimately here, we get the value of the let expression, and then we leave then the A and F go out of scope. So the last instruction of the let was to squeeze them out, and that means to slide down to memory cells in order to abolish and abandon A and F. Okay? So that's the code, and now you have seen everything of it. Okay, so you see, we can, so it's perfectly fine to generate code in this way. The only question is it complicated or is it difficult to implement these placeholders? And in order to do so, we have to kind of be perfectly sure about our memory layout. And so here is again our memory layout. So our organizational cells are down there. Now, what kind of organizational cells do we have? So we have to record the old PC. That's the same as for the C machine. We have to store the old frame pointer, because we are now allocating a new stack frame with a new frame pointer. So therefore, we have to save the old frame pointer. So that is there. And so since inside the function, we have a new global vector, because we take the global vector out of the F object to refer to. So the global vector which we had outside the function application, so this one we have to save in order to restore it afterwards once we are done with the function application. So therefore, we also have to store the old global pointer. Okay? Following that come the actual parameters that we have seen. We have put them on top of the stack, and then come the local stack for the evaluation of expressions. Okay? So that is, I think we have seen that already, but here it is important to see what is in which order we kind of store the organizational cells into the stack frame. And accordingly, we then now know what to do when we have the mark A, because we have to put the old frame pointer here, the old frame pointer, and we have to put the old global pointer on top of the stack. So the old global pointer is put bottommost as the organizational cell. The frame pointer is put in between, is put here, and the A is put on top. Yeah? So that is what we have to do. And then the frame pointer, the new frame pointer, together with the new stack pointer, both are put... Both are set to the old SP plus 3, so the topmost cell, organizational cell, are now the target for SP and for FP. And from that point, SP0, so to speak, no, from that point, the stack pointer will kind of depart during the evaluation of the formal parameters and actual parameters, but the frame pointer will stay there. Now comes the apply. The apply thing, what should it do? Now the apply thing should kind of, when the apply thing, the apply instruction is called, it finds, so sorry for this complicated picture, but it finds on top of the stack a reference to a functional object. Okay? And now what does this functional object provide us with? Well, the functional object provides us with a global pointer, a global vector. Okay, so this global vector must become the new global vector. So that's easy. The other thing is, it provides us with the start address of the function to be called. Okay, so that must be put into the PC, because there we want to go. But it also may apply us with one more component. So let me kind of remove everything. So, and that is an interesting component which kind of causes a little bit of extra complication. It provides us with a vector of arguments, because the functional object may already contain some of the arguments, not all, but some. And these extra arguments must be added to the actual parameters which have been added in this particular call. So this 42, which we provided as parameter to F, if F has another argument already, because it has been already been applied to some, say, to 23, then we have to push this 23 on top of the stack as an extra parameter, because it should not be distinguished from the other parameters which are provided by the function application. So therefore, these arguments in the argument vector must be put on top of the stack. And we do it in this way, that the leftmost is put first, and then the next one is put there, and so on. Yeah. And again, the ordering is kind of arbitrary, whether we go from left to right or from right to left. We only have to have a consistent protocol, so that we kind of, if we put the arguments in a particular order into the vector, then we have to put to take them out in the corresponding order. And here, once again, the innermost, the bottommost the innermost kind of argument, so to speak, is to the very right. Okay, so that's kind of the convention. One could make it differently. I did it in this way. Okay. And now these three tasks must be done by the apply, and then the PS, since the PC is set to this 42, execution of the code will continue with the first address, which from the which is kind of wrapped into the functional object, which is which instruction? The test argument instruction. This is the first instruction which is wrapped inside the functional value. And this is the first instruction which is executed after the apply. Okay? Okay. So here's I only that the last element of the argument vector is the last to be put on top of the stack, and then and that is kind of the innermost, so this is the leftmost argument reference. And that kind of convention we must keep in mind when we pack something into the argument vector. Okay. So now come, having done that apply thing, which was not so complicated in the end, we kind of are bound to lift the curtain before these mysterious instructions, test arg k at the beginning of the body of a function and this return k at the end of the body of a function. So let us start with this test arg k. And these two are, one thing I can say for both of them, they are responsible, or they are required, since functional values can be applied, a function with 20 arguments, and a function with a certain number of arguments can be applied to less arguments or to more arguments. This is the under and oversupply with arguments, and we have to deal with both cases. So if there's undersupply, we kind of take the arguments which we have, wrap them into the F object, and return the F object, because we still have a function. If you have oversupply, we may consume some of the arguments, and then have to return another F object, which kind of will consume the remaining arguments. That would be kind of the idea. So the first thing to check whether there's an undersupply, this is done by this test arg instruction. So this is a test instruction. So how can it check whether the k is the number of arguments which is required? How can this test instruction check whether there are at least k arguments available? How can it do? So it is called when with a particular stack pointer and a particular frame pointer. The stack pointer points to the last, to the innermost provided argument. The frame pointer points to the first address below the outermost provided argument. So if you take the difference of these two, you get precisely the number of arguments on the stack. So you calculate, or we calculate, therefore, SP minus FP, and this gives us the number of arguments. And this kind of we can compare with K. If K is larger than this one, the function cannot be called. And then we kind of wrap it again into a functional value by putting all the arguments on the stack into an argument vector and return the F object again. So therefore, the F instruction consists of the following. We check whether there's an undersupply. If there's an undersupply, we do three tasks. Actually, so as I said, we in the end we want to wrap the arguments into the functional object and return it again. But these are kind of this is a series of operations, and I found it convenient to delegate or to separate it into three micro instructions. This is only for instructional, for kind of explanatory reasons. So if you implement it, you can implement it as ever you like it. But these three micro instructions allow it to separate, to kind of divide the complex task in easier subtasks. So what is this make vector zero? The make vector zero should create the argument vector. And this make vector zero why is it not a make vector instruction? As we had a make vector instruction for that. But this make vector instruction which we had required the explicit number of arguments to be put into the vector. And here we don't know the number of arguments. They are a dynamic, the number of arguments. They are SP minus FP, which is the runtime value. So therefore this make vector thing takes this runtime value and puts as many values into the argument vector as stated, as calculated in this way. And then this vector is wrapped into an F object, and that is not a make funval because it is different, because it takes the address from and the current fun, so it's the easiest way to create a new instruction for it. And then after that, the function application is over. Therefore the stack frame can be popped, and that we had no instruction for popping a stack frame, so therefore we create one. Yeah, this is this popenv. Okay, so now here comes the make vector instruction. It kind of first calculates the difference between stack pointer and frame pointer. This is the G, and then creates a vector of that length, and then copies the values into it. And as we said, the innermost value is put to the left, and the outermost, the bottommost is put to the left, and the innermost argument, so to speak, which is on top of the stack, this is put to the right end. Okay, so that was the instruction make vector zero, and that's it. So that is what we wanted to have. Now comes this wrapping. This wrapping, what do we have to do? The wrapping should create a functional value. And where does it get its global vector from? The global vector is taken from the global vector. So it's not on the stack as for make funval, because we had already wrapped the global vector, and we stored it into this GP register. And that one is put here. And the argument vector, this is the one which we have just created, this we put here. And now what is the address, the start address of the code? Well, currently we are executing the test arc instruction. The test arc instruction has some address, and when we evaluate it, the PC is incremented by 1. So therefore, the PC is 1 plus the value which we have to put here. Yeah. So therefore, we don't need an A or something. We can recover the start address of the body of the function from the current PC by subtracting 1. Okay? And that is what we do. This is the wrap. Now comes the popenv. So here is the popenv. So that is, we have somewhere our organizational cells pointed at by the frame pointer. And on top of the stack we have the value. Now what do we have to do when we pop the environment and we pop the stack frame? We have to recover the old PC, we have to recover the old GP, we have to recover the old frame pointer, and we have to slide down the value on top of which we have computed, this is in this case this functional value, to the bottommost organizational cell. So this value here must in the end be moved to this place, which is in fact, which is here. Okay? And beyond that, this is the old PC, which you put into the PC. This is the old frame pointer, which you put into the frame pointer. This is the old GP, which you put here. And that's it. Okay? So we store the old registers and copy down the value which we computed to the bottommost organizational cell, because this is the bottommost cell which has been occupied by the stack frame. Okay? Any question? So now we can kind of do, you see, this popenv is a simple simple operation. The wrapping is a simple thing. The make vector is also a simple thing. But the test RK has to do all three of them. So this is a complicated thing. So if you do all of them and write one picture to illustrate this instruction, I guess you would be a little bit, so this would be obfuscating the whole thing and would give us one page of pseudocode just to explain this instruction. But here we can now, by a sequence of operations, illustrate what the test arc thing does. So here we have a situation where we do the test arc. And we see that, so that means we have four arguments on the already provided, and the test arc says, oh, we need 5. So what happens? So we take the 4 arguments and put them into a vector. Then we wrap this value, this PC and this GP into a functional value and provide it on top of the stack. And then we pop this environment and kind of put that here. And that's it. And then we are done. Okay? Now, what happens? Now that was the easy case when we had too few arguments. Now what happens if you have exactly the right number of arguments? Then everything, all the arguments in the stack frame are consumed and we can do the popenv. Now what happens if there are more arguments than our current function can consume? This is the situation of an oversupply. This must be checked when we have reached the end of the body. Then we check for this oversupply. Once again, if all arguments are consumed, we can pop the environment. We can pop the stack frame. If not, we have to do something else. Yeah? So that is, we check this check, therefore this return instruction, which again has this K, which is the right number of argument, checks whether the all arguments have been consumed. How can we check it? This can be checked the frame pointer and the current stack pointer. What do we see in between? These are the number of actual parameters to this call plus the value returned by the function, by the body. So therefore it is, if it is k plus 1, then k are the arguments of the function, then this means that we have the right we had the right number of arguments, all of them have been consumed, we pop the environment. So you see here, now we reuse our micro instruction popenv and pop the environment. Yeah? Now if this is not the case, that means that more than k arguments have been provided. From these many arguments, we have consumed k. These we kind of squeeze out of the stack by sliding down the value which have been provided by the body by k items. So this is this instruction. Now what do we what is the situation now? Now on top of the stack, we hopefully have a reference to one of these functional values. And below, we have arguments. This is the situation when we call apply. And this we do. So we here inside the return k, we call the instruction apply. Okay? And that's it. So let us see here in this example what it means. So this is the situation when there is no oversupply. In that, this means we have the k arguments here, and on top of it, the value computed by the body. And then we said we pop the environment, which means we restore these registers and copy this value down there. This results then in this situation. Okay? So that is the case when everything is fine. Now what happens if we have oversupply? In oversupply, that means we have consumed some k arguments and there's still some arguments left, say 1. Then we squeeze out the arguments which have been consumed, and that means we copy this one k cells down into the stack. And then we have a situation, an f object applied, and below this f object further arguments, so that means we can again call apply to let the function application continue. And this apply then will again unwrap the functional value, will kind of put arguments on top of the stack, and then the test arc will be executed, it will jump to the body of the function, the test arc will of that function will check whether there's an undersupply, an oversupply, and so on.
Both languages we have seen are compiled into this machine code for the
Yes.
VMs. Why does the C code, why does the code for the CMA not test for functions and this code tests for for amount of parameters and this does?
Why does this, what, how, in the C machine? Why? Because in the C machine you can only call a function when you provide all arguments. Otherwise it's syntactically wrong. If a function has two arguments, you have to apply to two arguments. Or more. But that is if you have a variable number of arguments. But if you have a call, if you have a function application, you can always evaluate it. If it's syntactically possible and allowed, statically allowed, you can proceed with the application. Here, in functional languages, you could have also this undersupply thing. And this oversupply thing also, because you do not have this this weird way how in C you access these oversupplied arguments. Okay? So then there's always one more thing, and even if we are not Apple, but there's one more important thing, and that is, so far, we had local definitions, we had function definitions, we had function applications, everything is fine. But you cannot, we have no loops, so in order to write any meaningful program, you have to write recursive functions, recursive definitions. And the let definitions, the essential features of these were that they were not recursive. But now we want to have recursive definitions, and how can we do it? So here is the syntax. You have this let rec, and you simultaneously define local variables y1 to yn. Simultaneously. This means y1 can already be used in E1, and also YN can also be used in EN. All the variables can be used everywhere. Yeah? So how can we... This means we can access... So if we translate the E1, we must be able to access already the YN, already, although we have not yet seen the definition of YN. Yeah, so it's kind of, you need something like a forward declaration of all the variables in order to reference them already. Yeah, so that is, we allocate all n variables. This is kind of the forward declaration of all the variables. And then, now the question is, it is like for the let, what do we have to do with the E1 to EN? In call by value, in the call by value world, we kind of generate code which provides values for these and puts them into the right places. And in case of call by need, we would kind of create closures so that each of the variables will refer to a closure. And after that, having processed the recursive definition of y1 to yn, we then may proceed with e0. And for e0, if for the whole thing, we want to have the call by the value code v, then we have to evaluate e0 by means, have to generate code for e0 according to the code v scheme. Okay? So now, when we say we allocate the local variables, this means that we provide dummy values for them, which are put onto the stack, references to, so there are dummy values in the heap, for which we have references on the stack, and only so that we can refer to them and put them into global vectors and so on, or although the variable has not yet been defined. So that makes life there a little bit more interesting, that we have to do this, have to provide dummy values beforehand. And so perhaps I show you the overview of, we will kind of go through that, I will show you, we will start with that the next time again. So we start with allocating n variables by a new instruction, which we kind of will have to look at. Then we have to create code for the E1 with stack distance SD plus n. Why? Because you have allocated n things. So there are already n things. Stack pointer has been increased by n. So therefore, SD plus N. And once we have, now we have on top of the stack a reference to the E1, to the closure or the value of E1. And then comes a new fantastic instruction, which is this rewrite instruction. This is also a new instruction, which we will have to define. This kind of takes the reference and takes the value which has been pointed to on top of the stack and overrides the dummy which has been provided by the alloc. So it's kind of a backpatching, so that now the dummy, there is no dummy anymore, but the real value. So this is done by the rewrite N, which we will have to look at the next time in detail. And so on. The same thing, generating the code and then rewriting is done for every of the expressions. And after that, we generate code V for the E0 in the usual way. And having done that, we kind of can give up the space which we have allocated for the local variables, because they go out of scope, therefore a slide N. So that was it for today. Now my voice is a little bit shaky still. I think it is better. Tomorrow we will have no lecture. But the week after, in the next week, we then continue again with two lectures, so that you will receive enough information about that. But thank you very much for your attention today, and have a nice week.